Hi, everybody.
This has come from Meditations of John Muir, Nature's Temple. We find in the fields of nature no place that is blank or barren. Every spot on land and sea is covered with harvest, and these harvests are always ripe and ready to be gathered, and no toiler is ever underpaid. Not in these fields, God's wilds, will you ever hear the sad moan of disappointment. All is vanity. No, we are overpaid 1,000 times for all of our toil, and a single day, in so divine an atmosphere of beauty and love, would be well worth living for. And at its close, should death come, without any hope of another life, we could still say, thank you, God, for the glorious gift, and pass on. Indeed, some of the days I have spent alone in the depths of the wilderness have shown me that a mortal life beyond the grave is not essential to perfect happiness. For these diverse days were so complete, there was no sense of time in them. They had no definite beginning or ending, and formed a kind of terrestrial immortality. After days like these, we are ready for any fate, pain, grief, death, or oblivion. With grateful heart, for the glorious gift, as long as heart shall endure. In the meantime, our indebtedness is growing ever more. The sun shines in the stars, and new beauty meets us at every step in all of our wanderings.
In our heart of hearts, there is an eternal something, perhaps our essential nature, that always remains untroubled by the events around us. We may stumble, and yet that eternal voice is always whispering within our ear, supporting our life's journey. It is that presence of spirit voicing the universal and celestial song of oneness, love, wholeness, and peace. It comforts us in the midst of loss. It lifts us in the presence of sorrow. It lovingly nurtures us always, for we are its own. We are always eternally blessed and cherished. Like a sweet lullaby, we are folded in love, and we know that nothing that is ever loved can truly be lost, and no one who has ever touched a heart can ever truly pass away. Good afternoon, everybody. Today we're gathered here to pay tribute to the life of Albert Louis Wallace III and to honor him and the wonderful memories that we have of how he contributed to life. Today we look into our hearts to find peace with his passing and also to begin our journey of healing, healing that sense of loss and shock that we all feel. Will you join me in a moment of prayer? There is one life, one consciousness, one power, one universal presence, one God. Because this God is everywhere, I know that it is part of all people, all places, all situations, all events. It's all part of Spirit's kingdom. I know this includes me, and I know that it includes everyone here today. The people in this room, our friends and family, our neighbors, members of the community, we're all part of the infinite life that is Spirit. And so is the life of Al Wallace. And so also is this celebration of his life that we're having here today. It's a celebration because it requires nothing short of a celebration. It is rich and it is full of love and family, friends and community. It's also a celebration of his life because his life continues in our memories, in our hearts, in the eternal consciousness of Spirit. And so I'm grateful in advance for this time of comfort, of sharing, of reflection. I'm grateful for the stories, grateful for our lives as they touch the life of Al. I'm grateful personally for having known Al slightly and for the love and friendship that he so freely shared with all of us. And so I release this prayer with abiding peace. And so it is. Amen. I believe that every one of us in this universe has an actual purpose. Now, that might be kind of homespun or wishful on my part, but I believe that we each come to Earth shining in our own unique and special way, a light that cannot be duplicated, cannot be extinguished, cannot be overshadowed by anything else. Each of us on a unique and sacred journey of our own soul's creation. And when that soul is complete with its earthly journey, when it comes time for that soul to move on, when it is time to follow its own calling to the next step of the infinite journey, when this time comes, it may seem to those of us left behind that the light of the one we love has dimmed or shines no more. But just as a beacon from a lighthouse on a clear night guides the sailor safely at sea, we only see that light when it is pointed in our direction. Then it turns, and the light illuminates the path for another. So it is with Al and his light and his love. Physical passing can leave behind a void for those of us left behind. It's one of the reasons that we gather here today. We gather to remember, to share memories. We gather to allow ourselves that ability to express our grief and sadness. We also gather to celebrate, to be with one another in the releasing of this energy as we begin our own healing process, our own remembering process. Ultimately, we gather to accept and share the love that we all feel for Al and for one another. But more than any of this, we gather to honor him, to celebrate him, to acknowledge the amazing life that he expressed in so many ways. And so I invite us all today to open ourselves to simply receive the gifts of love, that compassion that exists for one to the other as we remember what life, and especially what Al's life, is all about. And that is love. That is the true vitality of life.
I'd like to share with you now our closing song that we sing here at the Portland Center for Spiritual Living, where Al and Donna and many of us get to dance it out. So we wanted to offer this to you this afternoon. Dancing is allowed. It is. I am love. I am loving. I am love. I am love, I am loving, I am love. It's the truth of who I am. If I forget, Spirit reminds me again. I am love, I am loving, I am love. You are love, you are loving, you are love. You are love.
Sang it here when I was here last. Thank you all for being here. I know that some of you came a long way. This is going to be harder than I thought. Al would be humbled and honored that you're here. You know, our ancestors were all immigrants. On our mother's side, they came to America to flee religious persecution in the 1600s. And eventually, they worked their way west, walking 2,170 miles on the Oregon Trail. On Dad's side, they immigrated from Bohemia and Germany in the late 1800s, where the name Wallace was created from the name Wallach. We are a typical American story. My brother's journey on his ribbon of life began in Dayton, Ohio. Our father, Albert Jr., there seem to be a lot of Alberts around here, was an Air Force officer, and therefore we moved often. Both our parents grew up in Oregon, so we always considered it home, regardless of where in the world we were. Our stability was our immediate family of parents and three kids. Carolyn was the oldest, me in the middle, and Al the youngest. Al and I were only a year and a half apart, and we were best friends all our lives. We had lots of really fun adventures as children. We played at teddy bears in Virginia. We went on long treks on the heath in London. And we crawled through culverts we shouldn't have been in, okay, in Germany. I especially liked it when he felt moved to become a philanthropist once and give away all his money. Of course, he gave it to me. I thought that was great. But Dad made me give it back. He had a really early sense of injustice for both people and animals, perhaps when he unintentionally took his hamster for a walkabout, which didn't work out real well for the hamster. He also spent a few months being a vegetarian after watching our dad take buckshot out of a duck after a hunting trip with dignitaries, with German dignitaries. We were lucky because for 2 years in Germany, we had the run of miles of the Black Forest behind us. He and I spent hours just blazing trails, or trying to blaze trails, in the dense forest and trying to get lost. But we never really did. After Dad's four-year tour in Europe, he was stationed back at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, where Al was born 10 years earlier. We actually stayed in one place for 4 whole years. Al was always shy, but he became a Boy Scout, and he had the opportunity to make really good friends. It was 1958, and the country was all about the space race. I believe that Al's lifelong fascination for the stars and all things celestial was fostered here from both Dad's involvement in the space program and visits to the Museum of the Air Force, which was devoted to aeronautical engineering and the history of flight. And if any of you ever talked to Al, he probably was going to bring the Wright brothers up somewhere along the line. But in an early age, gazing at the stars and the planets became his hobby. While stationed in Ohio, each summer the family spent a month driving and camping our way back home to Portland via any national park along the way. We stopped for picnic lunches, cooked over a campfire, and laughed over scorched marshmallows. Our camping equipment was rented from the airbase, which meant we always had one of them was always a leaky air mattress. And we were always a little minimalist. Is there a pattern developing here? Okay. But mostly the five of us, we just had fun. Our next move was a quick year in Southern California to Redlands. There was little time to get adjusted to a new school, and it was a lonely year for Al. Sister Carolyn went off to school at Oregon State, and it was just Al and I left at home. But there was some light on the horizon as our father retired and went to work for an aerospace company in Washington, D.C. Even though we had to move to Northern Virginia, we thought we would be there for the foreseeable future. Was that even possible? No. Our first year in Virginia, Al was a freshman and I was a junior at McLean High School. Still shy, he was not a happy camper, having trouble with schoolwork and adjusting to the general chaos of a very large high school. A counselor recommended that Al be tested to see if there might be some reason why he was having challenges at school. Lo and behold, the testing revealed that he was truly brilliant, but because of dyslexia, reading was painfully difficult. My parents took action and decided to find Al a small boarding school where he could flourish. St. James School in Hagerstown, Maryland was perfect. It was a private boys prep school with a small number of students, teachers who could teach him how to overcome his dyslexia, and an environment that would allow him to make friends and realize his potential. He was a few hours from home, so he could come home often and we could visit often. And we did. It worked. He made lifelong friends, joined the track team, long distance runner, okay, and his grades finally reflected his brilliance. Acing his college placement boards, he qualified for one of the 500 full-ride scholarships awarded that year by the U.S. Army. He was scary smart, but reading was his lifelong challenge. I visited him often in Baltimore before he graduated from Johns Hopkins, because at that point, it was only he and I that were on the East Coast. We went skiing in the Poconos and got stuck in one of the biggest snowstorms they'd had in Pennsylvania in years. We got unstuck because we opened the trunk of the sedan. Al stood up in the back Okay, and that's how we got traction. He bounced his way out of it. He and I took a 2-week, or however long the money lasted, trip to in his little tiny MG Midget to Maine with the idea of going to the Bay of Fundy. Driving north, we visited Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, but we had to drive straight home because we ran out of money to spend the night. But it was a great 10 days in his tiny, tiny sports car. After he graduated, we really didn't see much of each other for the next decade, as Al did his service as an Army officer. They stationed him in Okinawa, where he met and married his first wife. They spent some time in Colorado and California and had 2 children, Shirley and Albert IV. Remember, there are a lot of Alberts around here. Along the way, he became a CPA. You know, he graduated in the life sciences from Johns Hopkins and became a CPA. We never really know why. But he eventually ended up in Hawaii, where his first wife had his family. I visited them in Honolulu and observed that while he and his wife didn't seem well matched, he was totally devoted to his children. It was not a surprise when I learned that the marriage had ended and could I come spend some time with him in Hawaii, which I did. His journey was taking another turn. Somewhere along the line, by the way, we lost our sister, Carolyn. But it seemed like it was all kind of a blur as we were doing our careers and everything. Life changed dramatically for him when he met Donna. She was the love of his life for his whole life. I was really honored when Al asked me to be his best man at his wedding. I have never seen him so happy. Next thing I know, though, he was training and ran the Honolulu or the Hawaii Marathon? Honolulu Marathon? Yeah. More of that running thing, long distance thing. Like his ancestors, big challenges were in his DNA. A friend reminded me about this. He visited my husband and I, Dave, in Oregon 1 year, and we took him on his very first rafting trip on the Deschutes. And we were a little wilder in our younger days. Al was game for the two-night adventure with a group of our friends, maybe 16 or 18 friends, but somebody gave him this rather bizarre beer can helmet, which is kind of an arrangement where it had a sort of a band around here and a place for 2 cans of beer. And what you did is you opened the beer and then you had 2 tubes and you drank the cans of beer. Well, the problem is that once they go down the tubes, you have to finish the beer. As is expected for all freshman rafters, when he got to shore, he fell spread eagle on the ground. And then he looked up at us and just gave us the biggest grin ever. Fun was also in his DNA. A job eventually brought Al and Donna to Southern California. I hope that's right. Was it a job? Yes. Okay. They bought a mid-century modern Eichler house in Orange and devoted themselves to their jobs, friends, and their dogs. They often took the dogs to the beach at early morning walks on the weekends. I got to do that a couple of times with him. He built a koi pond. And the fish were huge, by the way. They got massive. And a lily pond. And he even gardened and grew lettuce and vegetables in the backyard. But very importantly, they often had dinner parties. And everyone stayed at the table long after the food was taken away so we could discuss the topic du jour. Donna's a great cook, and the guests' ideas and conversation were always stimulating, diverse, often animated, but never angry and incriminating. As Richard and Diane are here, can attest, just about any topic was fair game for discussion. I always look forward to attending their salon. Perhaps saying that Al had a passion for hiking is an understatement. He hiked all over California and spent 2 weeks hiking in Patagonia at one point with his friends. He hiked the 211-mile John Muir Trail, which runs from the Yosemite Valley to Mount Whitney, mostly in conjunction with the Pacific Crest Trail. His primary hiking partner and best friend, Harold, a curmudgeon, hiked a large portion of the PCT 1 year, and Al and I were up there to sort of meet them off the trail. They really looked like they'd been on the trail for 5 or 6 days. But Al was hooked, and as his retirement loomed close, he was committed to beginning his retirement by being a solo thru-hiker on the Pacific Crest Trail. A through hiker means you do it all at once. You don't do sections of it. You do it from stem to stern. He would later write, "No small task, one big adventure." Al said he wanted to hike the PCT so he could look up at the stars and the Milky Way every night. And in 2015, he did, in fact, solo hike the entire 2,650-mile trail from Mexico to Canada. Please note that the Oregon Trail was 2,170 miles. His reward after a day of hiking up and down the mountains, through the valleys, over rocks and branches, through streams, was a view of the heavens. Through hikers use a moniker, a trail name, rather than their given name. They have some very bizarre names, but his name was Stargazer. It took Stargazer 5 months and the support of his friends and family to live his dream of hiking what he called the ribbon. Hiking friends and Donna helped him through California. Nancy was there when he was in the Reno area. My husband David and I took him through Oregon and southern Washington, and Donna and the dogs took him the rest of the way to the Canadian border. By the way, he apparently illegally hitchhiked from the end of the trail to meet you. And I understand something about the fact that you crossed the border and almost didn't get back by accident. Yes. He called the trail the ribbon, which he followed one foot in front of the other wherever it would lead him. For him, it was the adventure of a lifetime. If a soul can be invigorated, if that's even a word, then it was so for Al. He came back from the hike and gave himself 3 years to write a book. Couldn't just hike the trail. He had to write a book, right? He gave talks to groups. He wrote articles for magazines about his transformation and how biology and human physiology played a role in it. He finished his book. Last year, Al and Donna decided to sell their house in Orange County and become hula birds. Summers in the Northwest and winters in Hawaii with Donna's family. They bought a home in Vancouver, joined the center, and were beginning a new journey on the ribbon of their life. Kind of like immigrants on the Oregon Trail. Everybody ends up here, okay. But whether you were Al's wife, his child, sister, niece, nephew, cousin, grandchild, in-law, old friend or new, you knew him to be a kind, caring, good man and a devoted friend and father. He will always be my hero. I like to think of him as my best friend, an old soul, on just another adventure on the ribbon, putting one foot in front of the other.
What I would like to do now is to open this up for further memories of our friend Al. Anyone who would like to share a memory, a thought, something that was important between the two of you, please come forward. It would be lovely to hear some other memories of Al.
Richard, I knew Al, well, Al and Donna, for at least 25 years. We lived close to them in Orange County, California in those days. And I even wore this pants today because I spent the first 10 days of Al's hike on the Pacific Crest Trail hiking with him. And this is my hiking pants. And I want to, you know, Joni's right, Al was very smart. And I guess one of the things I'll probably always remember, he knew lots of things. And he was really, really loved history, a lot of history. But he didn't love just the dates and the events and the people. He always connected it to the cosmos. He understood things about the black holes and the stars, and he connected all that, those things together. He loved the mythology, the way Richard, what's that guy's name? Joseph Campbell. The way Joseph Campbell taught, he loved that. And he was able to, he was an accountant, a CPA, and he was able to connect all those kind of things together. He didn't just talk about what happened in 1852 or what that star was, or he was able to connect all those things together. And I don't know many people that could do it in the way he can. And so that's what I'll particularly remember about him.
By the way, his daughter Shirley and Albert IV are right now on an airplane coming here to live. We'll pick them up at the airport tonight. Okay, and they have an apartment in downtown Portland. And this is what Al wanted. He wanted them to move here. Unfortunately, even if they had been able to get a ride here, that they would have been too ill to attend this service. But Shirley sent me this and asked me to read it. Albert and I are unfortunately too ill to be present at the service. These words written by me, Shirley, are for our Aunt Joan to read on our behalf. During Dad's last healthy months this past summer, before he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, he took me to Mayo Clinic, where I was treated by specialists for a devastating but curable neurological disease that causes inflammation of the brain, autoimmune encephalitis. During this time, Dad fought tirelessly with my insurance company and contacted state representatives to get my medical treatments approved, which my insurance company was denying. During those last healthy months of his life, Dad did what a caring father does, dedicated and determined to fight for and succeeding in getting his daughter the right medical treatment and health care. Even though I remember very little of these last few months because of the encephalitis affected my memory, I am very grateful that I got to spend this precious time with my dad. No matter how difficult things became, he stood by my side, and I know he kept pushing me forward towards the path of a healthy and positive future, both for me and my brother. Illness is a horrible thing that steals livelihoods and futures. Dad did everything he could within his ability to set me on the pathway to health, and I am still traveling down that road. I wish you were still traveling with me on the path to recovery, Dad. I miss you.
Would anyone else like to share a memory?
I'm David, and I was Al's, one of his pastors, I guess, in Hawaii for a while. And we went to a meeting of men in California, New Warriors, it was called. And we did a bunch of men's things. And at the end of the week, Al was so enthusiastic. He had had a breakthrough of some sorts. I can't remember what broke. But I remember him mounting the hood of a car, and he was so happy. He stood on the hood of the car, and he just bounced up and down. I was thinking, you're denting the hood of the car. It was an older car, so there was no... But he was so enthusiastic and so happy that all he wanted to do was, he was screaming and bouncing on the hood of this car. And I remember thinking, wow, it'd be fun to be that free to do that. I don't feel called to do that, but I was so glad that Al, that was the kind of enthusiasm he got about things. And he was so enthusiastic, could not help but bounce on the hood of that car. So good for you, Al.
Yeah. Anyone else like to come forward? Well, let's have just a moment of silent closure then. We can take a moment now in the silence of our own heart to simply call to mind a particular loving memory of Al. Just allow your minds to call up an image or a time or a place where you felt just so connected to this gentleman. Silently, if there's anything you'd wish to say to him, you may do so. If there's anything that's unfinished between you, it's not too late. He's here to listen. Just take this memory silently in our mind and encase it with that love and friendship. Let us pray. Gently and silently within my own being, I feel that sense of grace and the Holy Spirit surrounding this place, flowing in around each one of us as we honor Al and our memories of him. We acknowledge our feelings of sadness and loss, but we recognize they're part of our humanness. We know that they will dissolve over time to be replaced by memories such as this, memories of life and love and joy. We allow ourselves to surrender into the arms of the divine, where comfort, support, and nurturement melt all fears. We commit ourselves, we recommit ourselves to the process of life in all of its forms. We commit ourselves to love, both today and in the days to come. And now, with hearts filled with gratitude for the love expressed through our friend Al, we simply say thank you. Thank you for the privilege of sharing this earth with us. May his next journey unfold easily, sweetly, and gracefully. And so it is. Amen.
I'd like Brandon to come up here. One of the things, you know, Al's son was quite ill for most of his life. Albert had surgery when he was 15 years old, where I forgot what they call it, but it disabled him. And so there was a lot of things that Al wanted to do with his son, but could not. And, you know, there was this estranged divorce and all this kind of stuff. But that didn't prohibit Al from sharing his love with my grandchildren and my children. And I feel that I need to speak up about that. And also, I wanted Brandon to come up because I was going to tell a little story. Some of you already know the story, but I'm going to say it since it's being recorded. My Al loved hiking, right? So he just wanted to take Brandon and my other grandson, Kainoa, hiking. And so they both came over to California, and I don't know, how old were you?
16 to 15.
Yeah, and so Kainoa was about 12, 13 or something like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he set them up with backpacks and stuff, and they went and hiked Mount Baldy, and I think it was 10 miles up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Al was so enthusiastic about it. I mean, he just wanted to just share this love of hiking and nature. And so they went up. They went hiking, and according to the story I heard, and that's why I'm having you here as a fact checker, but he said that they complained the whole time, all the way up to Mount Baldy.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I remember a lot of complaining, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, gee. And, you know, and part of it was that, you know, really, you should have a properly fitted backpack, and these kids were still growing, and he had some old backpacks, and he gave it to them, right? Anyway, and the little vignette of the story is that they sat down, and Al had the meals prepared and everything, and Kainoa asked for the menu. I was just telling somebody that story. He says, "Where's the menu?" And Al says, "There's no menu. You got the beans, or I don't know what you folks had, some kind of food."
It's like dehydrated eggs, bacon bits.
Yeah, because they were going to spend the night up Mount Baldy. So he said, Al told me, he says, "Well, in the middle of the night, somebody ate the food." And I think it was Kainoa, because he refused to eat it first. And then, "I'm not going to eat that."
Explains that, huh?
Yeah. Does that sound right?
That explains where the food went.
Yeah. Do you have any memories of that?
Hiking down the mountain.
You were happy to do that.
Oh, yeah, it was easy. You just, you know, incline going down.
Thanks. And one more thing about Al, and that we didn't really talk. He was so excited about the eclipse. People here know all about it because we had Kainoa. Kainoa came over for that one too. But that was a highlight in his life because he felt so connected with life and earth, and here was a majestic phenomena to sort of like confirm that sense of aliveness. And I just want to share that too. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna.
I spent a couple days on the trail with Al up around Mount Hood. In fact, this picture was taken the first night we got together. And I would like to read a few excerpts from the Stargazer's View, New View, experiencing the inexhaustible energies of the universe on the Pacific Crest Trail, a book by Albert Lewis Wallace. You must have a call to adventure to thru-hike the Pacific Crest National Scenic Trail. After all, the trail is a winding ribbon through miles of mountain and desert wilderness that extends across the length of California, Oregon, and Washington. You don't take a large part of your whole life to hike a trail without some strong motivation, a call from within to embark on such an adventure. No small task, one big adventure. It seemed to me that the PCT through hike would be a better retirement party than an ocean cruise or a trip to Europe. Most important of all, I had the support of my wife, Donna. I needed new ways of framing my horizons. The PCT would give me, I hoped, unique experiences, adventures, and new points of view. I did not want to be retired, a retired person on a slow glide path to the end of life. I wanted to fly high, fly fast, and live like there was no tomorrow. To start a new life, I would find my path by trekking it. I put my attention on the following, the 2,650-mile long ribbon. Fascinated by the stars in our cosmos, I don't use a telescope. Gazing up at the stars is my hobby. Looking up at Sirius on a winter night, I experienced the past because the light entering my eyes traveled 7 years to reach my retina. I contemplated the scene from our sister galaxy, Andromeda. The grander my view, the larger my creative possibilities. Sights along my journey were waiting patiently for me to notice them. Their appearance called out to me to look at them, to hear them, and perhaps touch them and smell them, experiencing the natural world in a new light. I was becoming part of that world, not separate from it. Before this hike, I had been unwilling to acknowledge my part in the leading role of my own life. It seemed to me that for most of my life, I had been the good supporting actor that made the star of the show look good. We each have our own stories to tell, but this was the first time in my life that I imagined being the star of my own play. Without conscious awareness, this adventure was moving me closer to a better sense of well-being. This was joy. This was atonement. This was freedom from guilt, sorrow, anger, and unnecessary fear. My whole body tingled with a sort of awe-inspired appreciation for what I sensed was the sacredness of this one brief moment in my life, crossing the bridge of the gods. I would never be passing this way ever again. Every moment of our lives is unrepeatable. For this moment, it was like the kiss at the end of your wedding vows, or the first time you hold your infant newborn child. All of the temporary news and signs of man, which were constantly shifting, mortal, and motivated by self-interest, became unimportant and insignificant. The timeless flow of the river, which was more ancient than the mountains it traversed, would still be there long after everything I considered humanly important was gone. On my second to last night on the trail, I sat under the tamarack trees and was drenched in the warm glow of the setting sun. It was a perfect spot, the grand paradise experience. And in a moment in my life that for the first time I felt at peace with the world and myself exactly as it was becoming. I was embedded in the fabric of the universe, and it was embedded in me. It was the moment of my acceptance of the interconnectedness of all cosmic forms and their timelessness. My points of view about the world and my place in it have expanded. The possibilities and opportunities have filled me with a renewed sense of aliveness. I am intimately a part of all that this cosmos is becoming. And my life has just begun. Undaunted, the ribbon still calls me forward. And I was too slow on the trail, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. The family has also planned a reception so that we can linger a bit and tell some more stories about our experiences of Al. Also, just to be there for one another and express our love and compassion. So please, after some closing music, please help yourself to some of the finger food in the back. And please linger. There's a table full of some of the most amazing photos of Al from a young age until most recently. And if you didn't get a chance to sign the guest book, please do so. Thank you.